الحمد لله رب العالمين، والصلاة والسلام على رسول الكريم وعلى آله وأصحابه ومن استنى بسنة لهم الدين. All praise due to Allah, may Allah's peace and blessings be on the last Prophet Muhammad صلى الله عليه وسلم and on all those who follow the path of righteousness until the last day. The session today will cover the last of the questions, completing the section on Qadr from Al-Hakami's book, A'lam al-Sunnah, Al-Manshura. This is question number 155. The question is, what is the status of faith in Qadr with regard to the religion? Al-Hakami said, belief in Qadr is the system of Tawheed. Just as having belief in the means which bring about good and repel evil is the system of the Sharia, belief in Qadr is the system of Tawheed. Just as having belief in the means which bring about good and evil and repel evil is the system of the Sharia. What does he mean by that? The Sharia consists of a variety of instructions, all focused on promoting the causes of good and preventing the causes of evil. If a person did not believe in the causes of good or evil, he would reject the instructions as meaningless or incorrect. Consequently, that would result in his rejection of the Sharia itself. For example, if a person did not believe that wearing the jilbab, the outer garment, causes good and prevents evil, as the Almighty said, Ya ayyuhan nabi, قُلْ لِأَزْوَاجِكَ وَبَنَاتِكَ وَنِسَاءِ الْمُؤْمِنِينَ يُدْنِينَ عَلَيْهِنَّ مِنْ جَلَابِيبِهِنَّ ذَلِكَ أَدْنَى أَنْ يُعْرَفْنَ فَلَا يُؤْذَيْنَ. O Prophet, tell your wives, your daughters, and the women of the believers to drape their cloaks over themselves. That is better that they be known and not harmed. So if a person didn't accept that, is rejecting the idea that the jilbab causes good and prevents evil, instead, they believe that the jilbab causes harm by oppressing women and prevented good by not allowing them to display their natural beauty. Right? This is another way of looking at it. In such a case, a woman who held that point of view would not wear what Allah commanded. And a man who holding that view would allow his wife and daughters to expose themselves in public. Similarly, if a person did not believe in the divine decree, which affirms Allah's knowledge of everything, his creation of everything, and his control over everything, his belief in Tawheed, the unique oneness of Allah, would be defective, as it is based on Allah's omniscience and his omnipotence, meaning his knowledge of all things and his power over all things. His oneness of dominion, what we call Tawheed al-Rububiyya, is based on his creation of and control over everything. His oneness of names and attributes, Tawheed al-Asma wa Sifat, is based on his knowledge of everything. And his oneness of divinity, Tawheed al-Uluhiyya, is based on his creation of and control over everything. As the Almighty said, Ya ayyuhan nas, وَاعْبُدُوا رَبَّكُمُ الَّذِي خَلَقَكُمْ وَالَّذِينَ مِنْ قَبْلِكُمْ لَعَلَّكُمْ تَتَّقُونَ. O humankind, worship your Lord who created you and those before you so that you may become pious. If the person denied Qadr, claiming that he had free will to do whatever he wished, and that Allah did not know his decisions before they happen, he denies that Allah is the only creator. He denies that Allah is the only creator and that he knows everything. He denies that he knows everything. If on the other hand, he affirms Qadr, claiming that he had no free will, he denies Allah's perfect justice and his wisdom, as he would force his creatures to commit sin and punish him for it. That's what it would mean, which is unjust. And he would forbid his creature from sin and then make him do it, which is unwise. What would be the point? What is the wisdom in that? So belief in Qadr is the system of Tawheed. It is the core. It is part of the fabric which makes up the creed or the belief system of Tawheed itself. Just as belief in the means which bring about good and repel evil is the foundation of the belief system of the Sharia. Is that clear now? However, the religion will only be consistent and correct for one who believes in Qadr and adheres to the Sharia. The religion of Islam will only be practiced in a consistent manner and will be correct in its practice for one who believes in Qadr and adheres to the Sharia. The Prophet ﷺ affirmed belief in Qadr, and to the one who asked, should we not then depend upon what has been written for us and leave actions? He replied, act, for each will be facilitated for that which he has been created for. Thus, whoever denies Qadr, claiming that it contradicts the Sharia, has deprived Allah of his knowledge and his ability, and made the creation independent in its actions, and a creator of its own deeds. By doing so, he has affirmed another creator besides Allah. Rather, he affirms that all the creatures are creators. Whoever affirms Qadr, that's one side. The other side, whoever affirms Qadr using it as an excuse to fight against the Sharia, negating the creature's ability and choice granted to him by Allah, the Most High, who made him responsible for it, claiming that Allah has charged his slaves with that which they cannot do. That's what he's doing. Like giving a blind man the responsibility of putting dots and dashes in the Quranic text. To do so, he accuses Allah of oppression, and his predecessor in that accusation is Iblis. May Allah curse him. When he said, قَالَ فَبِمَا أَغْوَيْتَنِي لَأَقْعُدَنَّ لَهُمْ صِرَاطَكَ الْمُسْتَقِيمِ, he said, because you have sent me astray, this is after Allah had cursed him, thrown him out of the hellfire, and he requested a respite until the last day. Then, when he was given the respite, this was his threat. Because you have sent me astray, he here is attributing his misguidance to Allah. I will indeed sit in wait against them on your straight path. He promised that he would send human beings astray. As for the true believers, they believe in the good and the evil of Qadr, and that Allah is the creator of all of that. They submit to the orders and prohibitions of the Sharia, and they judge it, and they judge by it among themselves in public and in private. They also believe that guidance and misguidance are in the hands of Allah. He guides whom He wishes from His mercy, misguides whom He wishes out of His justice, and He is most knowledgeable about the appropriate place for His mercy and justice. إِنَّ رَبَّكَ هُوَ أَعْلَمُ بِمَنْ ضَلَّ عَنْ سَبِيلِ وَهُوَ أَعْلَمُ بِمَنْ اهْتَدَى. Indeed, your Lord knows best, He alone knows best, who goes stray from His path, and He knows best who receives guidance. They further believe, the believers in Qadr, true believers, they further believe that Allah does that with infinite wisdom and incontrovertible evidence against the creation. They believe that reward and punishment are dependent upon applying or not applying the Sharia, not Qadr. Reward and punishment is not according to Qadr, but according to human application or lack of application of the Sharia. In other words, they don't put it to Qadr alone. Well, you know, Allah has decided to punish some slaves and to give others paradise. It has nothing to do with our actions. It's just a decision of Allah. No, it has to do with our actions. Instead, they only console themselves with Qadr during calamities. This is when they console themselves with Qadr. Right? See the difference of the point here? When you're dealing with right and wrong, should I do this or should I not do this? You don't use Qadr to justify your wrongdoing. You choose wrong and you say it's Allah's Qadr. You chose wrong. So the Qadr is not brought in here. You recognize in this circumstance your individual choice. But you will resort to Qadr, to saying it's Allah's Qadr, when calamity strikes. This is when you use it. This is when the believers use Qadr. Calamity strikes, rather than starting to blame others, right? That's what people usually do. It's the opposite. When calamity strikes, people say, it's your fault. Why you didn't, and why, and why, and why? This is what happens, isn't it? Instead, for the true believer, when calamity strikes, he says, it's Allah's Qadr. Prophet ﷺ said, don't say if only, because that opens the door for Satan. If only you had done so and so when I told you to do it, this wouldn't have happened. No. It's Allah's Qadr. Instead, he said, say, Qadr Allah wa ma sha fa'al. It is the destiny of Allah, and He does what He wishes. So we console ourselves with Qadr only in times of calamities, not in times of decision making between good and evil. And when good occurs, instead of attributing it to themselves, they attribute it to Allah. They give Allah the credit for that good. They say instead, Alhamdulillahi alladhi hadana li hadha wa ma kunna linahtadiya lawla an hadana Allah. All the praises and thanks belong to Allah, who has guided us to this, and never could we have found guidance were it not that Allah had guided us. When the good comes, this is the way the believer approaches that good. Because of his belief in Qadr, he approaches it in this way. He attributes the good there to Allah, instead of feeling proud, arrogant, you know, because of what I did, this is why it is happening. So they don't say, as Satan said, إِنَّمَا أُوتِيتُهُ عَلَىٰ عِلْمٍ عِنْدِي. This is because I have been given, it's been given to me because of the knowledge which I possess. And when they commit a sin, rather than blaming it on Allah, as Satan did, they are repentant. They say instead, رَبَّنَا ظَلَمْنَا أَنفُسَنَا وَإِن لَّمْ تَغْفِرْ لَنَا وَتَرْحَمْنَا لَنَكُونَنَّ مِنَ الْخَاسِرِينَ. Our Lord, we have wronged ourselves. If you do not forgive us and bestow upon us your mercy, we will certainly be among the wrongdoers and the losers. Satan said, after committing the sin, رَبِّ بِمَا أَغْوَيْتَنِي لَأُزَيِّنَنَّ لَهُمْ فِي الْأَرْضِ وَلَأُغْوِيَنَّهُمْ أَجْمَعِينَ. O my Lord, because you misled me. Again, blaming Allah. I will beautify the path of error for them on earth, and I will mislead all of them. This is the arrogance, lack of humility, rather than recognizing error, asking Allah's forgiveness. It just makes him more bold, more disrespectful. And when calamity befalls them, this is Al-Hakami goes on to say, they say, Inna lillahi wa inna ilayhi raji'un. Truly, to Allah we belong, and to Him we will return. And they don't say, as those who disbelieve say, O believers, do not be like the disbelievers who say to their brethren, this is Allah saying, O believers, do not be like the disbelievers who say to their brethren, when they travel through the earth or go out to fight, if they had stayed with us, they would not have died or been killed. That's that same if only they had stayed with us, instead of going out to fight, they would not have been killed. For the believer, he or she recognizes that life and death is in Allah's hands. And they don't resort to if in order to put in the hearts of others regret or increase their own regret. Salih bin Fawzan, Al-Fawzan had said, this means that when a person is afflicted with a calamity, he realizes that it is from Allah's qadr. He perseveres, hopes for Allah's reward for it, and submits to Allah's decree. And Allah guides his heart, replaces for him the lost worldly possessions with guidance in his heart and true conviction. Furthermore, Allah may give him back what he lost, or grant him something that is even better. If we look at the benefits of belief in Qadr, I have collected about 10 benefits. The first of which is that belief in Qadr is or represents the completion of faith. Since belief in Qadr is one of the pillars of faith, of the 6 pillars of Iman, a person's faith is not correct and complete unless and until he holds true belief in Qadr. Furthermore, since belief in Qadr is a clear demonstration of Allah's dominion over the creation, a person's faith in Allah's lordship, his rububiyyah, is not correct and complete unless he holds true belief in Qadr. So Qadr is a key element in the completion of faith in correct belief. Secondly, it provides security from shirk. Qadr provides security from shirk. Many people develop idolatrous beliefs in order to reconcile a good creator and evil in the world. We spoke about that earlier. Zoroastrians, because they couldn't deal with evil coming from God, they said evil is from Satan. So they have a God of good, Ahura Mazda, and a God of evil, Satan, Angra Manu. So this is shirk. Once you have identified another God in creation, you've fallen into shirk. Also, those people who have erroneous beliefs concerning human free will and who recognize human beings as creators besides Allah, meaning they are able to create their own deeds, Allah has no control over it, they're free to do what they wish. This is an element of shirk here, because the creation which belongs only to Allah is given now to human beings. They've been made independent creators. Correct belief in Qadr affirms that Allah is the only creator and acts as the dividing line between shirk and tawheed. Belief in Qadr is the dividing line between shirk and tawheed. Third point, reliance on Allah. Since Allah is the creator of causes and effects, He has the ability to stop or change the effect of a particular cause. Person falls off a building, 20 stories high. Cause, effect is what? Death. But every now and then you hear about somebody who falls 20 stories and gets up to walk and walks away from it. It's in Allah's hands. He can make that happen. Right? So, knowing that Allah has that ability to stop or change the effect of a particular cause, when a person, for example, takes medicine, he should trust in Allah and not in the medicine. When he takes medicine, he should trust in Allah and not the medicine. Ibn Abbas reported that Allah's Messenger said, "Ad-dawa'u min al-qadr. Ad-dawa'u min al-qadr. Wa qad yanfa'u bi-idhni Allah ta'ala." Medicine is a part of qadr. Medicine is a part of qadr. It may benefit with Allah's permission. It may benefit with Allah's permission. Counting on Allah's perfect knowledge and His full control of Qadr, one cannot go wrong by requesting His choice in the dua al-istikhara. Dua al-istikhara is a part of our belief in Qadr, trusting in Allah that what He destines for us is best. One who decides to do something, he makes two rak'at, then he makes the dua of istikhara, supplication in which we're seeking Allah's decision as to what is good for us. And after making the dua, we go ahead and we do what we had decided to do. If we find difficulty in doing it, every step that we take, we find hurdles in our way. It's not working out. Problems are arising. These are the signs to tell us that this choice was not the best choice, to leave it. This is the way we know. Not by going to sleep immediately after making the dua, trying to dream something that's going to tell you what the answer is. No. Not by making the dua when you don't know what you plan to do, you have not made any choice in the matter. You're going in there and you don't really know, is it this or it's that? You're asking Allah to decide in that way, which is not the way that dua istikhara is to be done. The fourth benefit is steadfastness in facing the challenges of life. Life is a challenge. لَقَدْ خَلَقْنَا الْإِنسَانَ فِي كَبَدٍ. Human beings are created in struggle. That is the nature of life. Human beings are created in struggle. From the time we are born, just being born, if you've ever seen a baby born, it's a massive struggle coming into this world. And from that point onwards, the child continues to struggle. When it's first, you know, learning to walk, you see the struggle that it get, you know, to crawl, for example, for a baby to start to crawl, the struggles that they have to go through to get crawling. And then for them to get up and walk, see the struggles they have to go through. And then kids, when they want to ride a bike, see the struggles that they have to go through. You know, and then you when you want to learn to drive a car, struggles that you have to go through. I mean, though these are conveniences, you know, the car and the bike, etc., but still it's a struggle for you to be able to utilize it. And that's just in movement. But then look at the rest of our lives. They're filled with struggles, whether it's on the job, whether it's in the home, whether it's, you know, even when we go on vacation, vacation is supposed to be a relaxing time, you find yourself in the middle of struggles. So all this all around us. We can't escape it. لَقَدْ خَلَقْنَا الْإِنسَانَ فِي كَبَدٍ. So belief in Qadr gives the individual steadfastness in meeting the challenges, the trials of life. Belief in Qadr makes a person persist in his adherence to the straight path, avoiding carelessness in times of success and ease, and despair in times of calamity. This is proper belief in Qadr. Because what happens to most people when they receive great blessings from Allah, they forget Allah. And they're just so caught up in their happiness of their success and having all this money, they squander it, they waste it. They don't fulfill Allah's commandments regarding it at all. This is what happens to them. So they don't have steadfastness. Even if they were practicing before, all this wealth comes, practice gone out the window. Or on the other hand, a person suffers tragedy. What do? Instead of being patient, they fall into despair. Oh, it's too much. Why? I can't understand. Why me? You know, blaming themselves, blaming other people. You know, it's just... So Allah is Qadr. Allah has put this trial on you for you to be a better person, for you to grow. That's what it's there for. But one has to grasp that the trial is for that purpose. Otherwise, it just becomes punishment and suffering. You just suffer from it. So he is steadfast. Sticks on the straight path. Straight path is the one which Prophet ﷺ laid. One which tells us to be humble and meek. Even though we have huge amounts of wealth, etc., it should still not make us, you know, it shouldn't make us arrogant and proud. And no, we should still be humble and meek. Straight path also means that when the trials come, we don't fall into despair, but we are steadfast and patient. So there's humility in times of ease and success. There's patience in times of calamity and trial. He does that, the believer does that, because he knows that everything good in this life comes from Allah. And everything in this life, whatever happens, is from Allah. And there is ultimately good in it. So he takes benefit from whatever circumstance he or she is in. The fifth point, belief in Qadr helps the individual maintain caution and alertness. It makes the individual cautious. Cautious how? Because people in this life change. A person may be good for a while, and you see them go astray, misguided. A person may be misguided for some time, you see them find their way. They're guided, it's straight. Hearts change so easily, so quickly. And the Prophet ﷺ had said in a particular statement, indeed, the hearts of Adam's descendants are between the two fingers of the Most Merciful. They're like a single heart which he turns as he wills. So the believer is always careful about what's happening to him, what's happening around him, so that he doesn't go astray. He's always watchful, careful. And he's fearful at the same time that his final actions may not be bad. He doesn't want them to be evil. That the final deeds that he does when he leaves this world are deeds which are displeasing to Allah, because that's indicative of a bad end. So this belief, though he is caution and alert, his belief does not make him lazy and apathetic. Because some people have said that the reason why Muslims are so backwards now is because of their belief in Qadr. You know, this has been said time and time again. Because of their belief in Qadr, this is why they're so backward. But reality is that that's not the case. They believed in Qadr before, and they were the leaders in science and all these other fields. In Baghdad, in Cordova, in Spain. Throughout the world, they were the leaders of science, technology, culture, etc. Europe was at its feet, learning from them. Qadr didn't stop them from being at the top. So it's not true. People are backwards today for reasons which lie within ourselves. Whether it is the improper distribution of wealth in the country, people not paying zakah as they should. As they say, if Muslims paid their zakah, the wealthy Muslims throughout the Muslim world paid zakah, there would be no poor people amongst us. We would not be a poor nation. Just paying the zakah. But the vast majority of the rich and the super rich don't even think about zakah. It's not an issue. The sixth benefit of belief in Qadr, it strengthens the individual in facing danger. Most people, when they're faced with danger, they shy away. They want to run in the other direction, fearful of danger. But the one who believes that whatever happens is preordained, one's lifespan is already written, then that's going to be motivation for that individual to make sacrifices, to be fearless. That's what the Sahaba were, is what shocked the enemies among the Persians and the Romans. When they ran into them, they were just shocked. These people, ragtag army, would come and just devastate them. They would have all their, you know, armor and troops and everything, you know, lined up, and this ragtag army would just hit them like a tornado, just knock them down like bowling balls. Why? How is that? Where is this coming from? You know, they had no fear. They had no fear of death, because if Allah had written for them that it was your time, then no matter what you did, it's coming. So it made them fearless. You know, these are one of the qualities. Qadr gives that individual that sense of fearless. And that's, of course, very, very important when it comes to issues of jihad, you know, where the Muslim doesn't turn his back when he's out fighting. The idea of turning and running, not acceptable. Shifting your position, you know, to maneuver, it's another thing. But turning your backs and just running for your life, no. It's considered sinful. It's considered sinful. So this belief in Qadr, it gives the believer the confidence to face perilous situations with a firm heart. And this becomes especially relevant for those seeking reform, for example, to be able to confront the tyrants. They don't care. They will speak out against the tyrants. You know, and Prophet ﷺ had said that this was one of the greatest forms of jihad, to speak the truth in the face of a tyrant. He just snatches you and kills you afterwards, that's it. But to knowing that that's quite possibly the consequence, but you will stand and tell him the truth anyway. And also to speak out in general to what is haram, what is forbidden in the society. You're not silent, just seeing haram all around you, and you just carry on oblivious. No. Because you're worried about your job. You're worried about all kinds of things. Number seven, among the benefits, belief in Qadr, is gratitude. One who truly believes in Qadr realizes that any favor that people render to him is ultimately from Allah. Any favor that people render to him is ultimately from Allah. But Prophet ﷺ said, "Man lam yashkur innas, lam yashkur Allah." Whoever doesn't thank people, don't thank Allah. Allah, Prophet ﷺ still said that. So though we recognize that whatever good or benefit people do for us, it's ultimately from Allah, it doesn't negate or cancel the responsibility to thank people. Why? Why does the Prophet ﷺ insist that we should thank people, when ultimately it is Allah? Why don't we just say, when somebody does something good for you, just say, Alhamdulillah. Thanks are to Allah alone. Wahda. No thanks for you. Just thanks to Allah alone. Why is this not acceptable? Yeah, you will break that person's motivation to do things for others. Because the weakness of our nature is that when we do things for people, we like to be thanked. This is our own weakness. We like to be thanked. When we're thanked, we're encouraged to want to do more. It makes us feel better. So knowing that, recognizing that weakness in human nature, Prophet ﷺ said, whoever does not thank people doesn't thank Allah. Yeah, it makes people feel good. Because naturally, somebody does something for you, you thank them, they're going to feel good about you. You know, so it's good. It helps to build good relationships with people. So, one who recognizes that all good that comes to him or her is from Allah, when he or she expresses gratitude to those who help them, they remember at the same time to show gratitude to the true giver, who is Allah. They don't forget. You don't go on one hand where you don't thank these people. No, you thank them. But on the other hand, you don't go overboard. You thank them and forget Allah. No. You thank them, but you must also remember that ultimately it came from Allah. So thanks should be given to Allah. So this belief in Qadr helps us to be more thankful to Allah. And this is something which is very important, and so important that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala made our daily prayer based on it. Alhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen. Starting right off with that. Thanking Allah. And this is what is different, or this is the basis of the difference between the prayer of a true believer and the prayer of a believer by custom. The believer by custom, when he puts his hand up for dua, he just says, Allah, I want this. I need this. Can you do this for me? That's the essence of his prayer. There's no thanks. Not thanking Allah for all of the good that Allah has done. It's all he can think of is, give me more. I want, my needs. So this is not the way to approach Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. So Allah teaches us in Surah Al-Fatiha, first and foremost, we thank Allah and praise Him. That's where we start from. Thanking Allah and praising Him. So belief in Qadr helps us to remember, to be thankful to Allah and to praise Him. The eighth point of benefit from belief in Qadr is that it helps us to avoid falling into the traps and tricks of magic and fortune telling. People get involved in magic and in fortune telling to try to make their own qadr. They want certain things to happen. Women, they want their husbands to love them, or some person so they can marry them, whatever. So they go to somebody who makes a potion for them, tells them sprinkle this in his food or whatever, and he's gonna love you. This is magic. People going and dabbling in magic. Fortune teller going, tell you about the future, what's going to happen, reading your palm, the lines on your hands. This is going to be in your future, that's going to be in your future. People go, for why? Why? Because they believe that if they can get this information, then they can make their own qadr, they can make their own destiny. Knowing the future, then of course, you make the right choices now, if you know what's going to happen in the future. So, of course, all of this is considered to be a form of shirk and disbelief. Prophet ﷺ has forbidden it. So belief in Qadr makes this stuff seem foolish, makes it seem so insignificant we wouldn't even consider it. As people who have no real understanding of Qadr, they say nasib, whatever happens. Marriage, they say, is nasib. You marry whoever your parents tell you and it's just nasib. It's qadr. But the Prophet ﷺ, he told us certain steps we should take. If it were just nasib, didn't matter who you married and just marry, he wouldn't have said, marry the pious. Women are married for four things: for their wealth, their money, their family status, and piety. He said, marry the pious. So it's not just nasib. Yeah. After you've married the pious, you did whatever else the Prophet ﷺ said for us to do, then, now it's nasib. But before making any effort, just to say it's nasib, no, this is not right. The ninth benefit is that Qadr helps to eliminate certain social diseases. Perhaps the biggest of them is envy, jealousy. Min sharri hasidin idha hasad. Such a big evil that Allah dedicated a surah to it, or at least a part of that surah. That it's an evil force, an evil emotion. One which drove Satan to do what? To disobey Allah at the most critical of times. Jealousy. How can I worship him? And you created him from black stinky mud. I'm better than him. You created me from fire and created him from clay. That is jealousy expressing itself. Haughtiness and pride, on the other end of it, is jealousy. Jealousy creates that. So belief in Qadr, when a person believes in Qadr, he knows that Allah is the one who gives and takes. Whatever people have, Allah gave it to them, and He can take it from them. So it's not worth being jealous over any of these things. If Allah wishes it for you, it's coming. If He doesn't, it's not coming. So when a person actually is jealous, when he expresses his envy, what he is doing in fact is expressing an objection to the divine decree. Allah decreed for that individual this, and you're not happy with it. You're not happy with the decree. You want it for yourself. So envy is dissatisfaction, the expression of dissatisfaction with the decree of Allah. This is why Allah said in the Quran to Prophet Muhammad, not to look. Don't strain your neck to look at what Allah has given these disbelievers. He's given them things. Don't strain your head to look. It will only create in you a feeling which is not befitting. It's guided to us in general. Prophet ﷺ said, don't look to those above you in material things. Don't look to those above you. Look to those below you, because it is better to remind you of Allah's favor. Looking to those above you, you'll never be satisfied. There will always be people above you, and you may have so much, but you are dissatisfied. You're not happy with it, because you don't have as much as so and so. That's the danger. The tenth point, last point which I, amongst those which I gathered, is that belief in Qadr also encourages us to be generous. It encourages generosity. Because Qadr implies that poverty and affluence is in Allah's hands. Therefore, the believer has no hesitation in being generous. He believes if you give this, Allah will multiply it. Allah will multiply it. It's the promise of Allah. He will multiply it. So he's not hesitant. When generosity is needed, when it's called upon, he's there. Right in the forefront doing it. Okay, so those are the main 10 points which I gathered from different books on the benefits of belief in Qadr. The last thing that I would like to cover before the Adhan is the question, should Qadr be discussed in the first place? We did this whole set of months on Qadr. Should we be discussed in Qadr in the first place? There's a hadith, authentic hadith, in which the Prophet ﷺ had said, إِذَا ذُكِرَ الْقَدَرُ فَأَمْسِكُ. If Qadr is mentioned, restrain yourself, don't get involved. But we just finished doing a whole section of a book on Qadr. Now, the point is that, and some people say this, you know, it's better not to talk about Qadr. Leave it. However, we have to consider that Qadr is one of the articles of our faith. And we are supposed to know our faith. Saying I believe in Qadr doesn't just mean words, I believe in Qadr. So, what is Qadr? Oh, I don't know. I believe in it anyway, though. If you believe in something you don't understand, will it benefit you? No. You'll not be able to benefit from it. If you don't understand it, you don't know what it is, how can you benefit from it? So, therefore, if we consider that Jibreel Jibreel came and asked the Prophet ﷺ about the articles, and he is the one who said it's Qadr. And at the end of that event, when Jibreel came and asked the Prophet ﷺ about the different pillars of faith, etc., the Prophet ﷺ said, Jibreel came to teach you your religion. So, that's affirmation that questions to understand what is the basic articles of faith is there. Also, the Quran itself, it has many verses on Qadr. The word is Qadr itself mentioned, and the effects of Qadr, the principles of Qadr are all mentioned in the Quran. And Allah at the same time said, أَفَلَا يَتَدَبَّرُونَ الْقُرْآنَ أَمْ عَلَىٰ قُلُوبٍ أَقْفَالُهَا. Will they not think deeply about the Quran, or are their hearts locked up? So Allah is telling us to reflect on and to think and to understand. And the Sahaba, all these hadiths that we came across where the Prophet ﷺ said different things, Sahaba asked, what about this? What about that? Should we not act and just depend on Qadr? They ask questions of the Prophet ﷺ to get clarity. And the early generations of scholars, they wrote books on Qadr. So then what did the Prophet ﷺ mean when he said, if Qadr is mentioned, restrain yourself, don't get involved. We have to understand it in the context that Prophet Muhammad ﷺ on one occasion had come out his home and he heard some of his companions arguing about Qadr, and he became angry and he said, were you commanded to do this, or was I sent to you in order for you to do this? Indeed, it was such disputes in this matter of Qadr which caused the destruction of those who were before you. I am determined to call you not to have dispute amongst you in this matter of Qadr. So what it is the Prophet ﷺ talking about? What is the Prophet ﷺ talking about? He was prohibiting disputing about Qadr. That we should not get involved in arguments, right? In areas of Qadr which we have no knowledge, just arguing for the sake of argument. This is detrimental. And ultimately Qadr is from the unseen. What we know of it is what the Prophet ﷺ has revealed to us, what Allah revealed to him. So we know there is an element of it that we have to stop at. But still we are allowed to ask in those areas where knowledge will clarify for us what is the correct belief in Qadr. Okay, that basically completes the section on Qadr. Next week, I will bring the notes which I have prepared for the topic. We'll do a quick review of the topic, and I'll give you some sample questions. And inshallah, the week following it, we will do an exam on it, a test on it. I hope inshallah all of you will participate. But next week we'll give the material. Actually, it will be available earlier, by around midweek this week, Tuesday. It should be ready. Those of you who would like copies, inshallah, make sufficient copies for everybody. Right, the tapes for the course, inshallah, we should have them ready by the middle of the week also, inshallah. So we'll have the complete set of tapes. I mean, how many sessions did we do on it? Anyway, we'll have them ready, inshallah, by around midweek. If not, latest will be next Saturday. and the written material will be available at the same time, as I said, and also some sample questions from each of the topics, and to help you prepare yourselves. So any questions on what we have covered now? The issue of the discussion of Qadr, I think it's clear why it is something necessary. To the degree that we have done, we try to stay out of getting into the areas where we really don't have any answers. We stop where Allah has stopped, where His Messenger has stopped. We don't go any further than that. But within the realm of the information we have from the Quran and Sunnah, we can look at it and try to understand it.
This is the hadith. It's said that when Musa al Islam sat in Sahar pain, he took someone, Allah asked him to take someone, juice from some leaves. Next time when he had pain, he struck away and took the juice from the leaves. And his pain increased. Then Allah said, what is happening? He said, I took the same juice. He said, first time you had believed in me, now you believed in the leaves. Is it a real hadith?
I'm not familiar with it. Brother mentioned a hadith or story which was narrated to him concerning Prophet Moses, Prophet Musa, that he had had some stomach pains or whatever, and Allah told him to take some leaves and extract something from it as like medicine for it. He took it and it cured his pain. And the next time, but of course he had turned to Allah asking him about it. Second, next time that he had the pain, he just went straight away and got the leaves. When he took it, it didn't remove his pain. In fact, his pain increased. So when he asked Allah about it, Allah told him that the first time you believed in me, and the second time you believed in the leaves. It's expressing an idea which we spoke about, which is true. When you're taking medicine, you have to put your trust in Allah, not in the medicine. Right? But taking medicine is part of Qadr, as the Prophet ﷺ said. But this incident, I don't know of, so I really can't speak and say, was it really a hadith, or this is just a story that is circulated. Inshallah, if anybody has information on that, please bring it, share it with us, so we can all benefit from it.
Is it correct if you tell this story?
Is it correct to pass this story on? No. If we don't have certainty, because we're talking about a messenger of Allah, for us to speak about incidents from his lives without knowledge, then this is not wise. Islamically, we should avoid that. You know? Well, this question of about the difference between fortune telling and weather forecasting, if both people use the term inshallah, meaning a person looks at the lines on your hand and says you're going to have 5 kids inshallah, and the other person, you know, gets the information from, you know, the weather satellites, whatever, and they make their estimation that yes, rain is likely to come, so they say it will rain tomorrow, inshallah. What's the difference between the two? The obvious difference is the one who is forecasting the weather, he is following discernible causes and effects in this world. Wind blows a cloud, which is a rain cloud, it's blowing it in your direction. And everywhere it has passed before it's dropped rain, the likelihood of it dropping rain on you is good. So you say, it will rain here. When the cloud hits us, it's going to reach us by tomorrow, inshallah. That is something which is knowable, you know, to that degree. It's an estimation, and acceptable. But looking at lines on your hand, and saying the way this line is, it's a bit crooked here, this means you're going to have 5 kids. What science is this? Where is the science here? This is just pure, you know, speculation, has no basis in science. And if anything happens of that, then you're dealing with the jinn. That's where you can get knowledge mixed with lies, but yet knowledge when you're dealing with the jinn. So you're saying inshallah afterwards doesn't change the fact that you are relying on something which is not a cause and effect, part of the cause and effect system, which Allah has revealed to us. Having a particular curve in the line on your hand, that doesn't cause you to have 5 children. Further questions? No, inshallah, then we'll... Oh, go ahead.
Like it is said that when a person is born, his destiny, his luck, his vision, so many years ago, that he will be a good guy, a bad guy. So, then why he will be incredible by Allah, why he will be killed by Allah because of his deeds? It was already written by Allah that he is a good guy, a bad guy.
Okay. The question that you have raised, why is a person held accountable for his deeds when it is already written whether he is going to be good or evil? That question was what this whole course was about, right? Yeah, so you've come in on the first time, for the first time today. So basically you're asking us to repeat the whole course for you to give you the answer. You know, better you had come on the first day and inshallah you would not be asking that question now. But just as a quick answer, what we have learned from studying this course is what? What's the answer to that?
Creates his own destiny by his choices, by choices he makes. But ultimate, what is written in law and matters only God knows. The other things, what he chooses, his destiny by his whether he chooses good or bad, but is by his own choice.
It's a bit disjointed. Come again.
I'm not attending that course, but I was just today morning. I was listening to Dr. Zakir Naik's lecture. And the same question was put by one of the attendants, and he answered in a way. He said, like, if God already knew what a person is going to do and put him into hell and heaven, he could have directly done that rather than sending him in the life. But then the person, if he puts in heaven, he's not going to question. But if the person is put in hell, he's immediately going to question Allah. Then why did you give me the punishment when I'm not done?
Yeah, but this is not answering his question. That's another issue. That's not answering his question. That's not answering his question.
May I try?
Okay.
You know, it's a combination of two. The human being is given the choice, but God has shown us what is the right path and what is the wrong path, and even the consequences of that. And the human is given the choice to take up any of those paths, but both of these paths is with the permission and will of Allah. Well, even if it takes the wrong, it takes the right path. But it is, now you seek the right path, Allah will grant you the right path. You seek the wrong path, Allah will let you go astray. But it is you who is picking up, and he knows in advance, that's where it is, what you are going to do and what you are going to ask.
Okay, it's got bits and pieces of it here, okay? Just to save time here now. The question, why Allah will hold you to account when He already wrote what you're going to do. The point is that what He wrote that you're going to do was what you chose to do. He wrote your choices. He didn't make you make those choices. He only wrote what your choices would be. So that's why He can hold you accountable. Because He didn't make you make the choice. But His knowledge, because His knowledge is complete, of past, present, and future. It encompasses everything. His knowledge does not make you do what you do. It is only knowledge of what you do. So that's why you can still be accountable, even though Allah wrote what you're going to do.
It means that a man is partially authorized to do something bad or something good.
Yeah, man has the ability to choose to do good or evil. The fact that Allah knows what he is going to choose doesn't make him choose it. It's still his choice, and that's why he's accountable. Okay? Subhanakallahumma wa bihamdika, nashhadu an la ilaha illa ant, nastaghfiruka wa natubu ilayka.